Barber resident, a very interesting fellow named Stephen Arvan Hook. He owns Worldwide Media Relations. He's got a very interesting background. We'll be hearing more about that in just a moment, but he has just completed a term serving on the Santa Barbara County Grand Jury. Without getting into the grand jury final report, I can ask Stephen about what it was like to serve in the grand jury. But first, let me say good morning to you. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Dick. It is really a pleasure to be here. We were just reminiscing, and I grew up listening to your newscast when I was just a wee boy growing up in Santa Barbara.
And, well, that's why I started as a wee boy. I'm only 29, see. That's
in some degree, you might have had an impact on my decision to go into journalism.
We're going to get into that in just a moment. Stephen was a journalist working for CBS as a correspondent in Moscow. He's got an interesting background. But first of all, the grand jury, what was it like to serve on the Santa Barbara County Grand Jury?
Well, as you know, there are 19 members on the county grand jury. Last year, we prepared 19 different reports. 19 different reports. And if you've ever served on a jury, you know that you have 12 jury members looking at just one case and how frustrating and complicated that must be. Well, add another 7 members and multiply that one case by 19, and that gives you a pretty good idea just how difficult the entire process is.
You know, I was listening to what the jury foreman had to say at the final report, and 20-some thousand hours involved in putting together the final report.
Well,
that's obviously combined, but still,
you,
that's a lot of
you multiply the 19 individual grand jurors that are putting in 20, 30, some of them 40 and more hours a week, it adds up pretty quickly. And
yeah,
put a dollar value on that, and I think the county is getting a very valuable contribution from these 19 citizens.
And it's all volunteer.
It's all, well, yeah, volunteer. You do get compensated for your mileage, and we have had a number of people driving down from Santa Maria and Lompoc,
mm-hmm,
and then also you get a $15 a day per diem.
Yeah, well, it's not a
lot. Yeah, it buys you lunch.
Buys you lunch, right, exactly. Now, what prompted you to apply to be a member of the Santa Barbara Grand Jury? What sparked that?
Well, you know, I was working as a newsman up in Santa Maria, and I'd covered grand jury affairs for 4 years. And one thing that struck me was that the large percentage, in fact, almost all of the grand jurors were retired, rather well-to-do, and representing, I think, very well a certain segment of the community, but certainly not the vast totality of the community, and that struck me as something maybe I could contribute as a younger, employed business person, that I'd bring a perspective they could use.
If anybody's interested in the grand jury's final report, you're going to get it on the Internet. I called it up. Yeah, the World Wide Web.
Yes, we're on the RAIN server.
Yeah.
Tilde SBCGJ, Santa Barbara County Grand Jury.
I think I even found it with a search engine. Nick Fitt found it, too.
Oh, isn't the World Wide Web fantastic? You can pull up any search engine, put in a name, Santa Barbara County Jail, for instance, and it will take you to one of our grand jury reports.
I don't want to go to the county jail.
You can find out what we saw looking at the county jail.
Right,
one of the best ways, kind of a virtual visit to the county jail.
Did you take a tour of the jail?
Sure. Every year, the grand jury goes through, and then, of course, that's one of our mandated areas that we're required to investigate, is how well the jail is doing what it's supposed to do.
I was given a tour of the new wing last year, and the new section, and the new technology, and saw the ops. I guess ops is where they sit, and they can watch all areas. And
right.
Fascinating.
Yeah, quite an operation there. And growing up here in Santa Barbara, my mother was a matron for the county jail back when it used to be up on the top floors of the Santa Barbara courthouse.
And remember that? Now it's I don't know what's up there now.
It's just empty storage, I believe.
Yeah.
You might find it interesting just to go up there and take a tour. A few of our grand jurors did, just out of curiosity.
They went up there,
Our jail system used to look like compared to what it is today.
Yeah, it's quite a bit different with the new technology.
It is funny, though, that no matter how big the jail gets, it always seems to be filled to capacity, isn't it?
Yes. Now you're born here. Were you raised?
Yeah, went to school here, Lacuna Junior High School, Harding Elementary, Santa Barbara High School, and then of course went away for college and professional.
So you're a natural Santa Barbaran.
Born and raised. I can remember back when Santa Barbara was just a small, little, insignificant city before Ronald Reagan became president.
Oh, yeah, it was before
we
had the big time.
We were here.
I should say native Santa Barbaran. I said that wrong. Natural. Native Santa Barbaran.
I'm a natural Santa Barbaran,
natural, too.
It radiates from me.
Native Santa Barbaran, native Californian, and raised in Santa Barbara. Grew up with KIST.
KIST 1340.
So did I, and we're in the Balboa Building and overlooked the ocean. I went by there, we used to be on the 6th floor of the Balboa Building.
Looked like you owned the whole block.
We did. Then. We had big neon signs. Everybody thought the whole building was KIST. We had the little corner up on the 6th floor. That was it. I went by there in the just to look at the old studios, and they still got some of the old windows still, you know, some of the old broadcast windows, but not the same.
No, but it was a good time to work in radio, wasn't it?
It was. AM before the before FM took over, AM was king. Yeah. Now, you left, you grew up in Santa Barbara. How did you get into broadcasting and as a journalist?
Well, I was working in social services, actually, up in Southern Oregon, and I started writing a weekly news column for the paper, and that intrigued me a little bit, so I finally went back to college and finished my my education in journalism. Nice thing about the journalism degree is 75%, you know, of journalism school is outside of the program. Psychology, economics, religions, you name it, all fit very nicely into a journalism degree. So just
I took a lot of general studies, and it helped in college.
Yeah.
Now, you went from there, you went worked for the TV station?
Started off in radio, public radio, and then went on into television as just a grunt reporter, then became a bureau chief, and then a news anchor, then a news director for an NBC affiliate in Southern Oregon, and an opening came up for a new news bureau in Russia, and Russian just happened to be my language in college.
You speak Russian?
Да, я понимаю по-русски. Немножко.
Нет, never that. But, you do speak it well. What did you just say?
Yes, I speak Russian a little bit.
A little bit? You speak it very well.
Anyway, yeah, and you know, less than 1% of American college students study Russian. So it certainly fit in very nicely with this opening, and very little competition for somebody with a news background that could speak Russian. So I wound up as a bureau chief over in Moscow, 1990 to 91, when all heck broke loose over there, and Gorbachev, his final months, and the rise of Yeltsin, and the street demonstrations, and the tanks into Lithuania, and
the Cold War coming to an end, and everything all happened at once.
Well,
and you're right in the middle of it.
Well, what a fantastic opportunity for a newsman in the middle of that. And back then, Russia was considered a hardship case. Nobody wanted to go there.
Yeah.
Somewhat like Dan Rather just happening to be in Texas when Kennedy was shot.
When you worked in Russia, what kind of accommodations? Let's talk about personal, like living accommodations did you have. What kind of accommodations?
We were very fortunate. We were involved in a joint venture with the Literaturnaya Gazeta, which was a very powerful Russian newspaper, almost the equivalent of the New York Times. And because of that, I was one of the few Americans that was accommodated outside of the media compound. I actually had my own apartment in a building. No other American living in the building, just down the street from the Kremlin, all because of our connections. Plus, it got me access to a lot of leaders that normally I wouldn't have had access to. I got to interview Yeltsin for the BBC, and just after he'd been elected president of Russia, and I got to cover Gorbachev and some of the ranking members of the Supreme Soviet.
You covered Gorbachev, but did you ever get a chance to interview Mikhail?
Not a one-on-one interview, no. Yeah, but
but Boris Yeltsin, you did?
Yes, for the BBC exclusive one-on-one.
Did you speak, does he speak English? I don't think he does.
Well, you know, you notice that about the Russian leaders. They're very reluctant. Even if they do speak English, they prefer to speak in Russian. First of all, you're on their country soil, and it's only respectful that you speak in their language. So typically during interviews and producing these interviews, we would use an interpreter simply so we could keep it in their language.
So when you asked him questions, did you ask him in Russian, or did the interpreter ask him for you?
No, we would ask the questions in English, and then the interpreter would put it into Russian and back and forth
way. But you were able to follow along, though.
Well, enough. I could tell if they were going the way we wanted it to go. A nice thing about using an interpreter, too, is it gives you a little bit longer to formulate a follow-up question.
Yes, yeah.
And you aren't just hanging there looking stupid sometimes, as you know can happen if you immediately have to respond.
You know, you really saw two sides of Russia. You saw it before democracy and I guess capital. What's the word? Before and after.
Sure. The Soviet communist state into kind of a more reformist oriented Russia, and I've been back a number of times since.
Capitalism is the word I want.
I don't know, boy. These words.
Capitalism.
It's hard to say what's capitalism, what's communism, what's socialism, and I think a lot of these terms are falling by the wayside. Just like what's liberal, what's conservative. Back in the 70s, you know, if you are anti-government, anti-police, you were a flaming radical. These days, you're an ultra-conservative patriot. It's hard to say what these labels mean anymore.
When you were living in Russia and you had your own place, how does it compare to living in the U.S.? I mean, do they have, pardon my arrogance about this, but I'm just curious.
Well,
do they have running water? Do they have gas?
It's bleak. It's bleak. In the summertime, they have a centralized hot water system, meaning they have one boiler that will provide the hot water for an entire region of the city. So every summer, for about 2-3 weeks, they shut off the hot water. You have no hot water. You have to boil your water to take a bath, boil your water
Why
to
do
wash
they
your
shut
dishes.
Off? Well,
to clean the system, to purge it.
They have one big water heater.
One huge boiler. And boy, doesn't that epitomize the difference
between a centralized
state and...
How long does it take to get your water warm? It must take forever to get the water.
Oh, well, you just live with it. And,
yeah. Wow.
That's certainly not the
start.
Yeah,
natural gas for cooking in your apartment.
Yeah, you have natural gas.
Refrigerator? How about washing, things we take for granted? Washing machines.
No washing machines. You could give one of the babushkas, a few rubles, and she'd take your laundry for you and bring it back nice and clean. Or you could simply do what I did, which was throw it all in the bathtub and pour in your boiling water
and let it steep and
hang for 2-3 days till it's dry.
What was the affiliate network facilities like for you? I imagine that would be...
We contracted out. We were an independent television news bureau. We contracted out to CBS, BBC, Israel Broadcast, and we actually had some of the most state-of-the-art equipment in all of Moscow. And in turn, CBS, BBC would come to us simply because we had the better equipment there, being a newer facility and also a parent company that dropped in quite a bit of money. As you know, broadcast and equipment can be very expensive.
Very expensive. As a matter of fact, if you attach the word to broadcast, everything goes up 300% for some reason, yet it's the same equipment as something else. Were you in Russia covering when the young man landed the plane in Red Square?
No, that was a little bit before my time.
Before?
They were calling Red Square at that point Sheremetyevo 3. they have the two main airports there, Sheremetyevo 1, Sheremetyevo 2.
I see, and this
two,
is one, so this is number 3.
That was amazing time.
Well, what's the most memorable event of Russia for you?
Well, coverage
of news.
You had the big sweeping stories, Gorbachev rolling his tanks into Lithuania and firing on, and which kind of symbolized the end of the glasnost reform period for Gorbachev. And then you had Yeltsin, of course, rising up in the coup, and I was there to cover that. And then you had Yeltsin firing on the parliament building a couple years ago, and I was there to cover that. But the thing that always struck me the most was just the human aspect of it. These Russians are such a powerful, strong people, such an emotive people that I was constantly moved by them, by their courage, by their dignity, by their strength in the face of overwhelming odds that, frankly, I don't think we Americans could hold up near as well as these Russian people, these strong Russian people have held up in the most difficult of circumstances.
You know, as we look and watch the news coverage of Russia, it almost strikes me as if they're almost like a third world country. You know, as they emerge out of communism, it seems like they really are a third world country.
Sure, well, the joke is that Russia makes Mexico look like a superpower. the shocking thing is that we ever lived in fear of this country.
Right, exactly.
I think one of the best-kept secrets of the Soviet system was just how inept their military forces are, their political forces, how shaky their fundamental economy was.
And this is all coming out with reforms. You see, gosh, I thought this was supposed to be such a great, powerful nation, and we're looking at some awful conditions.
Well, and that makes us wonder and gives us concern that, one, is our intelligence community so inept that they didn't know this, or is our intelligence community so corrupt that they did know this and simply kept it from us
to further
their own agenda?
And then you see people being young children coming over here to the United States for surgery, medical. The medicine over there is so poor, and the medical technology
is poor.
Sure,
Yeltsin can't even get penicillin for the treatment of his own mother. It's just horrendous over there. I've been working with a company trying to get in dialysis machines. They have no dialysis treatment over there. Very, very limited medical options. And, boy, to me, that's the most fundamental of human rights, is that you get basic medical care.
Yes,
and even that over there is just in such a state of disarray.
When did you leave Russia?
Our news bureau closed right in the height of all this action in 1991 when the Soviets started confiscating equipment of foreign journalists.
Time
to
go home.
My company said, get it out of there. Confiscating equipment, confiscating journalists. So, unfortunately, you don't often have control over what the parent company decides to do. So we closed it down, got our equipment out. But I've been going back a number of times since as a freelance journalist. Produced a documentary for Fox Television on the life of women in Russia. There's a horrendous story there. I wish we had time to go into that. I've been holding seminars.
I think King Harris went over to Russia, too, and did a whole piece on that, and comparing American soldiers to Russian soldiers, too. I don't know if you saw that piece.
I think he
won an Emmy Award for that piece that he did. Good guy. So you came back to the States in 92?
Yeah, back in Washington, D.C. is where I was based then, and did some work out of there, and... wound up with a new client, which has been sending training executives over into Russia to train young entrepreneurs how to set up their business, how to distribute goods, how to market themselves, and been doing this for free out of their own pocket. They pay their own expenses, their own travel expenses. I mean, top Fortune 500 company CEOs donating their time to go over and train these people. And that's ultimately, I think, where the reform of Russia and the salvation of Russia is going to come from. It's just young people starting their own businesses on a street corner, selling little knickknacks, and going from there. I think that's where we're going to see the true.
You know, I knew this was going to be a fascinating interview. You're quite a guy. I'm talking to Stephen Van Hook, who's a... now, I want to say this correctly. You are president of Worldwide Media of Santa Barbara?
Founder of it, yes.
Founder, president, CEO.
A number of groups going into Russia.
What is Worldwide Media Relations? What is that? Is that part of what you're just explaining in Washington?
Sure, and I've been working with a number of clients that have been going into Russia, trying to get them news coverage on their work within the Russian media, which is a big challenge over there, and also getting them coverage in domestic media for their work over in Russia.
You have credentials and all this to go cover presidents and premiers and all that?
I had my press credentials. Over there,
you got to compare credentials. What kind of credentials do you carry for something like that?
You have to be certified by the back then it was the Soviet Foreign Ministry. Now it's the Russian Foreign Ministry, and they do an extensive investigation into your background. And of course, all of that can be circumvented with a $200 bribe to the right individual. But
I see.
Without these press passes, you can't get into the Foreign Ministry building, which is where they tend to hold the press conferences with Yeltsin, and back then was Gorbachev, and gets you into the Kremlin, and generally makes your life a whole lot easier. But it's a very involved process to get that.
Now, did you do any coverage when you went back to Washington, D.C. as a journalist, or did you just went into the Southern Relations business?
Well, I started in Washington, D.C. working for a bureau called Sun World Satellite News, and we were covering Congress and the president for affiliates across the country.
So then you had White House credentials then covering...
It was a Senate House of Representative pass that pretty much got you carte blanche access.
People get there, it's no big deal. I carry state and city and county credentials, and the county is the one that gets me in when the president's here in Santa Barbara. We haven't had a presidential visit for a while. I guess, let me think, who was last?
Clinton, not too long ago.
That was it, yeah, and he wasn't even president then. What a circus that turned out to be. Man was here for a weekend, and people were running all around. It's crazy.
Well, talking about the changes here in Santa Barbara, I really trace it back to when Ronald Reagan got president. Suddenly you had the National Press Corps here, International Press Corps, looking for interesting little sidebar stories when they couldn't dig up anything on the president. So suddenly the world got to see what a beautiful little community Santa Barbara
was. Spotlight really came on to Santa Barbara. I covered...
Keep those presidents out of town.
Oh, really? Oh, man, that keeps me busy when they come in. Oh, I covered the president... royal greeting of the Queen, the official U.S. greeting of the Queen. It was going to be at the harbor, and they switched it to the airport because of foul weather. And I was 20 feet in front of the Queen and the President, Ronald Reagan, and Queen Elizabeth. And here's the band playing God Save the Queen and God Bless America, 21 cannon salute, and you're just shaking from emotion, trying to cover this and trying to explain it. It was an incredible experience.
Isn't that back when Reagan made the Queen ride in this ragged old Jeep throughout those dusty mountain roads?
Refugio Road to the top to his ranch. He insisted that she... And we ended up running all around that. She went to the courthouse, went to the mission before she was taken up that road to his ranch.
I would have loved to have seen some video of that, the Queen looking dignified in...
I think she was a little ill.
Backcountry Jeep.
I think she weathered it okay, but I understand. Rumor has it she was a little upset. Somebody was a little upset. What do you know? So working out of Worldwide Media in Santa Barbara now, what are you doing with yourself?
One of the projects I've recently started, I think one of the biggest concerns we need to have right now about Russia is this demolished sense of pride that they've gone through. Their economy, of course, is in critical state. Their cultural heritage is in such disarray, and I think they're really becoming very concerned about that as a people. Let's look at a instance in history where this happened: a devastated economy, a demolished sense of pride, and suddenly you see a resurgence of kind of a nationalist movement, and we are a good people, and we are the chosen people. And now you see in Russia a growing anti-Semitism, and certainly an anti-Westernism beginning to grow as they try to find a sense of identity. That's a very dangerous state for a country to be in. And you saw that in Nazi Germany, and what became of that when people get desperate for some sort of sense of self-worth. And I think that's something we have to be very careful about that in Russia. So I've been working with a number of groups and individuals trying to fortify Russian culture. Right now, their music, their composers, The state government, that's one of the first areas they've cut, is the subsidies for the arts, for education. Their budget in 1994 for school textbooks was zero. They spent no money on textbooks. Some of these students are learning out of textbooks that are 20 years old. That we're losing a whole generation.
Falling apart.
And you look at the fine contributions that Russia has made throughout history, Dostoevsky, Pushkin, Tchaikovsky, Prokofiev, and we're losing an entire generation of the arts and education over there. And I think that's something we really need to be concerned about try to help fortify that. So that's what I've been working on for the last couple of months.
That's quite a project you're undertaking. How many people are involved in this with you?
Well, it could be very simple. I've been working with a number of organizations, and there's a lot of concerned people that are fond of the Russian culture, and myself being one of them. The name of the group is Friends of Russian Heritage. One thing we've been working with is sister cities across the country trying to get libraries to donate their discarded books, university libraries, public libraries, to Russian libraries. Their libraries over there are in such a state of disarray. They can't afford to pay their staff, let alone buy new books. So their musicians over there, they can't get reeds for their saxophones, strings for their violins, and you see world-class musicians playing on street corners for just a few rubles so they can find something to eat that evening. And I think the world suffers because of that. We're losing such a fine contribution from these people.
Now, is this a nonprofit you're doing?
It's a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit. I'm going to ask you.
And apart from that, of course, I just do what I do, trying to make a living. I just finished work with one group trying to get dialysis machines, doing some research for them, and I did a series of seminars not too long ago for Russian business leaders and government leaders on how to work with the news media. I think that's very important. You know, there is still very little free press in Russia. The state broadcast agency is still controlled by the government. The larger newspapers still controlled by the government. And we need to train these government leaders how to work with a free press, how to feel comfortable talking to the media.
Did you find, as you were in college, to learn to speak Russian, was it a hard language to learn?
Well, it is very difficult. I mean, it isn't based on the Romance languages like French, Spanish, or German even. Yeah. It's somewhat similar to English. So Russian, you had to learn an entirely new vocabulary, certainly. And fortunately, a lot of the sounds are similar in Russian as they are in English, as opposed to Chinese or the Asian language, for instance,
Arabic. I agree. When it comes to quoting names and I don't have that much problem with Russian, where I would have with Chinese or Japanese.
Oh, sure.
Japanese not too bad, but there are some of the Germany. Oh man, that's in French. The French premier of Canada, Chrétien. I had to work on that one. But Boris Yeltsin, that's easy.
Well, the sounds are very easy to pronounce in Russian. We're just a few sounds that take you by surprise. But another nice thing about Russian is the alphabet. Once you learn the alphabet, basically you can read the language and pronounce it. I have no idea what you're saying, but basically every letter gets pronounced the same way. You don't have these diphthongs like you have in English. So,
Steve, would you like to go back to Russia? In the future?
Oh, certainly. I don't think I'd like to go back there and live again. If you have any kind of empathy for the suffering of people, Russia will really take a toll on you. Right now, the country is just in such disarray, so much suffering all around you. I mean, everywhere you look, no matter how well you're living, and I lived fairly well while I was there. I had a nice Volvo car and a nice apartment right in the center of Moscow, but still, just driving through the city, you see so many people huddled up on street corners, and old people, and unemployed and veterans, that there's just very little support for those folks right now.
What's the population of Russia?
Well, Russia is just a little bit smaller. I think it's right about 250 million. Back in the Soviet Union, of course, you chopped off quite a bit of the population when it went into Russia. But let's take Moscow, for instance, which is a city geographically larger than New York, demographically larger than New York, yet I'll tell you can find more produce in a 7-Eleven store than you can find in most of the major stores right in the middle of town. There were times, of course, it's changed now, but back in 1990 to 91 when I was there, even with hard currency in my pocket, there would be weeks at a time when I couldn't find orange juice, when I couldn't find eggs, when I couldn't find ice cream, which were my main staples.
Sure.
When I lived there as a journalist.
You take things for so much for granted here.
It's just hard to believe that a country as large as Russia, as rich as Russia, and natural resources should be living the way they do. It's just unfathomable.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. You're an interesting fellow. Wow. What a background. serving on the grand jury, can you serve again on the Santa Barbara County grand jury?
Sure, we had a number of people last year that had served before. Then, of course, you always have a couple of holdovers each year from one grand jury to the next to ensure continuity.
I know I'm doing about face here and changing the subject real quick, but I'm not ready to run out of time, but I just wanted to
Let's talk about Santa Barbara in the 70s again.
I love the 70s, sure. Would you like to serve again on the Santa Barbara County?
I don't think I could do it again. It sure takes a lot out of you, and I can see why you don't have more employed people working on the grand jury, because it is such an investment of your time and your energy. But I'm glad I did it for the last year, and I stuck
good
it out
experience.
For the full year. And actually, you know, every one of our 19 members stuck it out for the full year, which I think
is a
first.
This is a rarity,
isn't
it? Yeah, that's a first. I heard him mention that,
I think they just kept coming to hear my silly jokes, but we managed to keep them all anyway.
You're also involved in another. I got an award from your group for finding good news stories.
Yes, that's the media committee of Santa Barbara.
It's up upstairs in the hallway. We've got it all framed up and fixed up nice.
Sure, a number of concerned citizens in the community looking to encourage positive, responsible media coverage, and you won one of those yourself.
And thank you. I was honored. I was the day that they gave me this, it was pouring rain. I kept looking out the window and seeing this big storm coming, and I ended up having to go to work right away, and I wasn't able to stay long. But with a lot of distinguished people on that panel, Eddie Mazzetti Hatch, and you of course yourself, and let's see, who else is in the media?
Oh, just a number of people active in the community, some of them involved with media work of some sort, and others just...
Story I covered was a follow-up story. A fellow, a lady was robbed in Paseo Mall, and a citizen followed the suspect, chased him down, and held him for police, and we got his name and made him a... And I noted his name in the news.
I think we tend to forget that sometimes. You listen to the news, and all you hear is murder, homicide, pillaging, raping.
Sure, this last week.
It's nice to know that there are still some just regular, plain, heroic people out there.
And that's a nice venue with this program. You can talk to people like you and interesting backgrounds. And this is a finger of the news. And boy, you are a fascinating fellow.
I haven't even killed anybody recently.
Here I
am on the radio.
Just being a good guy. Well, Stephen, I want to thank you for coming in and chatting with us this
morning. It's been my pleasure.
And you think you want to do broadcast again in the future, network stuff like that again? Or are you going to stick with this?
Well, news is a tough business.
It is
12, 14, 16 hours a day. And it's not all that lucrative. Sometimes people think that if you're on the air, you must be making a fortune, which let me tell you, folks,
glamour.
It's not true.
Yeah, I pick up in a limo every morning.
But I love it. I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy spreading the word. And there's so many different venues to do that and use the same basic communication skills.
You know, you're an interesting guy with all this great knowledge. You ever think about running for public office? My reaction.
It's too much fun, more fun covering politicians than being one, isn't it?
I agree. I couldn't do it.
Let's take Larry King, for instance. He's great at asking a question, but boy, he sure hates to answer him, doesn't he?
I saw him on TV News last weekend being interviewed. He was rather short about everything. Stephen Van Hook, thank you for being with us this morning.
My pleasure, Dick Williams.
One of Santa Barbara's outstanding citizens.
And one of Santa Barbara's outstanding interviewers. I enjoyed the opportunity.
Thank you, Stephen. I'm Dick Williams. Have a good Sunday.